Gavin and Drobard was there mostly. As before Gavin got sick. So he taught so many nice things. He was my first travelling Sankirtan leader in England. So he told me many nice stories of Prabhupada. That Prabhupada used to tell him so many things. So he told me one time in the evening that he was in the room with Prabhupada and some sannyasis, and Prabhupada said to one sannyasi, "Go and give the Bhagavad Gita class. Engage your mind." So thank you for calling me. Otherwise, I'd just be on the Manoratham. But now if you ask some questions about Krishna, then my mind can be engaged in Krishna. So you have some questions? Yeah, please. If you want, you can write down also. Or Hindi may be put sakte hain, or main koshish karunga Hindi mein jawab dena. Yesterday morning I was discussing the Bali Maharaj pastime, yes. Is Shukracharya a devotee playing the role of a smarta, or is he actually a smarta? I've never seen it said that just for the sake of Leela, he's taking that position. Now, you see, sometimes in the Vedic literature, sometimes there are many such statements. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, abhakta hino cha. Those who are not devotees are fallen and rejected. There are many such statements that shatkarma nipano vipra mantra tantra visharadaha. A Vaishnava guru nasyad Vaishnava svapacha guru, who, that even if one is very expert in all mantras and tantras, that means like Karmakandi Brahmana, like Shukracharya, he's not fit to be a guru. Whereas even if one is born in a family of dog eaters, if he's a Vaishnava, he must be a guru. So there are many such statements rejecting persons who are not devotees. But on the other hand, we find that at least from the social point of view, persons, brahmanas, even if they're smartas, they're respected within Vedic culture for their Vedic knowledge, for their austerity. So he's a respectable personality. Once Prabhupada he initiated a devotee with the name Durvasa Munidas. He's in Australia. He's still around there. So it's a strange, you might think it's a strange name, Durvasa Munidas. Because he was always doing things that seemed to be anti-devotional, such as, actually offending Ambarish Maharaj. Oh, he didn't take offense. Then he got Duryodhana to, Duryodhana got him to try to the whole thing with the pot and Krishna taking the he wanted that the Pandavas would be embarrassed by Durvasa Muni with his 60,000 disciples coming. But then on the other hand, we find Durvasa Muni, he was the one who gave the benediction to Kunti Devi also. Whether it was a benediction or whatever, but there wouldn't be the Pandavas, and there wouldn't be the Mahabharata if it wasn't. It was all part of the plot, you could say, that he gave her the benediction that whichever demigod you call will come. He also gave the benediction to Radharani that whatever she cooked would be just like nectar. Of course, that's like Agni Devi giving the Sudarshan Chakra to Krishna, which is his personal weapon. We also find that Durvasa Muni is involved in so many. Well, there's one particular pastime with Krishna. That's a long story. Where the gopis, Krishna told the gopis, you should go to see Durvasa Muni. He's on the other side of the Yamuna. So bring him some gifts. So they went and said, well, how will we cross the Yamuna? Must have been the monsoon or something. So he said, you just say the Rasa Muni Upavasi. And you go and then the Yamuna will give you a pass. So they went and gopis sold big pots of milk and dahi and ghee and so many nice things. They brought it all to the Rasa Muni, he had it all. And then he said, well, how we go back over the Yamuna? He said, you just say, Krishna Brahmachari. And then you go. So, some joking is going on there. So, anyway, Prabhupada said, Durvasa Muni, he is a great devotee, and we can ask for his blessings, that we can get Krishna Bhakti. So he didn't say he's a devotee, but he's involved in Krishna's pastimes, and he's a great personality. So we should respect him. I've not seen it stated anywhere that he's actually devotee taking a different role. Although, that I was quoting that Kavina Mushana Kavihi, that Krishna quotes, that among all the learned persons, I am represented by Mushana, which means Shukracharya. So he's a great personality. That we can say. Was he a devotee before seeing Vishnu or after? No, he must have been a devotee before. Otherwise, where would he get the inspiration to offer everything to Vishnu? That stated that he had association with Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad, of course, was the son of a great demon. He was also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. It's among the daityas, Krishna is represented by Prahlad. But then Prahlad's son was Virochana, who was again a demon. Not just by name, but by... He was a genuine demon, by occupation also. He was also a demon. Then Virochana's son was Bali Maharaj, who was playing the role of the king of the demons. He did his social duty properly, but his attitude was one of devotion to Vishnu. Which he got that from a... He was associating with Prahlad Maharaj from early life. So he had that attitude of devotion, even though he did his... As the king of the demons, he acted as a good demon. He went and attacked Indra and took over the heavenly planets and did everything... He did his social duty. Everything that a demon was... The king of the demons was expected to do. But then when the test came, do you want to surrender to Vishnu? Then immediately he took the opportunity. At great risk. You see, when we read the Bhagavatam, or we read, then we know what's going to happen afterwards. But Bali Maharaj, he didn't know for sure what was going to happen. So, but he had faith that whatever, I don't care what happens, but I'm going to surrender to Vishnu, whatever happens. And apparently in the beginning, the worst, it was the worst thing socially, he was humiliated, he was, the demons had all worked so hard for him, they'd done everything for his sake, it means they wanted to share in the spoils of the heavenly planets, but all their hopes were pinned on him, and then he was a traitor. It's something like, of course we can never imagine him doing it, but the demons couldn't imagine Bali Maharaj doing it either. It's something like, our Prime Minister, Atal Bihari, going to, Musharraf comes, and then he just signs on a piece of paper, India is now subordinate to Pakistan, take it. So can you imagine how the Indian people would feel? Of course, he doesn't have the constitutional right to do that, but I'm just giving you an example, that how would you feel? Or I'll give you an example, now this will really... If you found out that the Indian cricket team had lost to Pakistan, and actually they had done it by bribery, then how would you, just like the Pakistan team lost in the World Cup last time to Australia, and they found out it was by bribery or something? It was rumored. So the Pakistani people, they wanted to, they are heroes. They wanted to kill them or whatever. So, like that, traitor. Who likes a traitor? There was in Ireland, there was one member of the IRA. That's the Irish Republican Army, like a guerrilla group. So he knew all the inside, all the names of all the people in the IRA, where they lived, and he turned all their names over to the British government. And then he was in court, and even his own mother rejected him. She said, "It was the worst day of my life when I gave birth to you." Even his own mother rejected him. Traitor. No one likes a traitor. The word, there's a word in English, Quisling. Have you ever heard this word, Quisling? It's a word which means traitor. So that word comes from the head of the Norwegian Fascist Party, who was encouraged Hitler, "Please come and invade us." And then when, as long as Hitler was in power, he was the head of Norway under the Germans. And then when the Germans were defeated, he was hung by the Norwegian people for being a traitor. Collaborator. Someone who collaborates with the occupying forces. Just like you'll find, again, from the Second World War in France, those young girls who thought, now the Germans are in power, so we can enjoy life, we'll be their girlfriends. So after the Germans were driven out, then they were paraded in the streets with their heads shaved. Nowadays they just kill them. They weren't so intense in them. So the kind of feeling, someone who cooperates with the enemy, they're despised, hated. Gali Maharaj, he, from the point of view of the demons, Vishnu was their enemy. And he cooperated with Vishnu. I mean, he was considered just from the worldly point of view, he was just a complete rogue. All his friends and the people who had put all their hopes in him, they were just disgusted and disappointed. But he risked all that because he knew that our only real friend is Vishnu. So it's when we're discussing these leelas, it's always good to remember that we are reading them in hindsight. But when whoever's taking a decision to do something, that they never know actually, at the time you don't know what's going to happen in future. Later we see. So Bali Maharaj was a devotee. That's the symptom of his devotion, that he took, he risked everything for the sake of Krishna. Therefore he is the very embodiment of Atma Nivedanam. Complete surrender. We all have our buts, B-U-T. B-U-T. We all say but. I am fully prepared to surrender to Krishna, but. Just little something. We all have our reservations. We may think we're very surrendered, but the tests, we have to see when the test comes. Krishna will test us all. Now we're talking about chanting 16 rounds, chanting 16 rounds, and trying to chant attentively and following the four principles. I say, now I'm really a devotee, but that chanting 16 rounds and following the four principles, that is admission to the school. That doesn't mean you passed. The tests are yet to come. You don't know when they'll come. It's not that you have. On this date, at this day, there will be the test. Actually, every moment there's a test, but there may be very severe tests. How much we're prepared to surrender to Krishna. It's very easy to, or it's relatively easy to half surrender, but there's no meaning to half surrender. There's some things you have to do completely or not at all. You can't half marry someone, for instance. It's all or nothing. So surrender means full surrender, actually. How can you make the mind a devotee? That's the question. Bhajare bhajare amar man ati manda. Bhaja braja vane radha krishna charana arabinda. Bhajan bina gati nai re. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. You worship Radha and Krishna within the forest of Vrindavan. Follow the process of sadhana. There's no other, bhajan vina gati naira, there's no other process than this. Then, throughout the song, he gives the name of so many devotees, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Smara, Mukunda, Marari, all the names of great devotees. So by remembering these devotees, we can also get strength and help from them. Apply ourselves to the process of Krishna consciousness. Many times we say, how can we do this, how can we surrender, how can we give up our attachments, but follow the process and pray to Krishna and his devotees. Follow the process, you'll find everything. If you see this nectar of devotion, you'll find all instructions. Keep good association, remain enthusiastic, chant with attention, everything is in there. You read the nectar of devotion, the first half of the book, which gives practical directions how to be Krishna conscious. Read this again and again and again and bring it into follow it. Follow that.
We are explaining in the morning about the interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita. That means how the Acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, have tried to give each and every word meaning as bhakti, devotional service. And even Srila Prabhupada translates yogi as a devotee.
Sometimes,
As opposed to the scholars, you know, who say that how can you call in the yogi as a devotee? So when we read sometimes like karma yoga, dhyana yoga, they also like bhakti yoga. Sometimes we are told in a similar way. Ultimately, it's bhakti yoga only. So how exactly we have performed faith that actually, this is a real meaning, and also when we are told by others how the different meanings are there, how we can convince others also.
I was saying also that Shivaram Maharaj, who you may know is one of Prabhupada's disciples and leaders of our ISKCON movement, I don't think he's been here, but he's written a very logical and detailed book called the Bhaktivedanta Purports on Bhagavad Gita as it is, which show how every statement of Srila Prabhupada's is absolutely as it should be and incontestable. So it just may be, for instance, that Krishna is speaking of karma yoga, but then in the broader context, everything is to, ultimately Krishna is only teaching bhakti. So whatever instructions are applicable within karma yoga, they're applicable within bhakti yoga, and the full expression or the full sense of what Krishna is saying, that is applicable, what Krishna is saying is applicable to karma yogis, but the full sense of it is applicable in bhakti yoga. Just like the well-known verse, kamane vadikaraste mafaleshu kadachana. Well, that's the half verse. So, that is true in karma yoga, but the full expression of that is in bhakti yoga. So there's no, there's nothing wrong in saying, and actually the full expression of, or the full expression, or the full manifestation of that instruction is possible in bhakti yoga. So, So actually when Prabhupada is, so many instructions how the yogi should control the mind, also fully applicable in Krishna consciousness. Karma yogi may understand that from a certain platform. And bhakti yogi understands it from the highest platform. You can get that book. That's a useful book for you to study, the book of Sivaram Maharaj's. All of you who have well-formulated powers of thinking, you can enjoy reading that because it's not such an easy book to read. It requires application of the mind. It requires some fairly advanced logical thinking.
So similarly, how we can derive that faith that this is the real intrinsic meaning is bhakti?
That's what I'm saying. You read the book and then you'll get all the answers and then you'll understand. Actually, you can have faith anyway, even without seeing. You see, this idea that we have to understand everything and then we'll believe it, this is not very reasonable. It's just like, before eating, first of all, you should analyze every item and understand what its nutritional value is, and that there's no poison in it. You can't do anything. You have to have some faith, otherwise you can't do anything. So, why not have faith? You think Prabhupada's cheating? You think he's misguided in illusion, brahm-pramad, vipra-lipsa, karana-parta? You think he's just making it up because he's biased? Why not have faith? You think you understand better? That's what it means. If you don't have faith, that means you think that you understand better than Prabhupada does.
Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, Bhagavatam stated that Lord Shiva appeared from the forehead of Lord Brahma. But then, with common sense, it seems that Jiva Tattva, under which Lord Brahma comes, should be higher than the Shiva Tattva, Shambhu Tattva.
Yes.
But usually, Shambhu Tattva is higher than the Jiva Tattva.
Mm-hmm.
So
your common sense doesn't work here, does it?
Exactly.
We're not dealing with common personalities. Lord Krishna also appeared from the womb of Devaki. Does it make sense? According to common sense, it doesn't make sense. But we're dealing with extraordinary sense, which is above common sense. According to worldly sense, the goal of life is to eat, sleep, mate and defend. According to Krishna conscious sense, there are many things. It's a different way of thinking. Night and day, black and white. In fact, most of the things in Shastra don't make any sense according to common sense. I mean, even if you say that, well, Shiva Tattva shouldn't appear from Jiva Tattva, but then even if he does, why out of the forehead? Varaha Dev came out of the nostril of Lord Brahma. He's Vishnu Tattva, higher than Shiva Tattva. One of the reasons that I have great faith in the Shastra is because it doesn't fit common sense. Because I saw everything you see, the so-called common sense people, they're all the most idiotic people. Their common sense it all ends up in ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha. That's their common sense. If you ask me afterwards, I'll say what I was going to say, but I won't say it here openly. Prabhupada would sometimes say some things privately. He wouldn't say it openly. I've seen a person worshipping Krishna Lala deity with great reverence for hours, chanting various mantras glorifying Krishna. He even does not worship any demigods, but by talking to him, we understand he has Mayavad understanding. How can we reconcile it? What is his position? He also possesses no belongings except Krishna's paraphernalia. Actually, I wanted to talk about this in the lecture next. I chose one verse discussing about Mayavad, so we can discuss it more. Maybe I wasn't going to get into it that deeply, but I'm just going to make the general comment that many people who appear to be devotees are actually Mayavadis. You'll find this is very common all over India, that people are worshipping Krishna, but actually if you speak with them, you'll understand they're Mayavadis. It's very, very common. Even in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we see there was one Rama Bhakta who always chanted the names of Lord Ram, and he served Raghunath Bhatta Goswami by carrying his paraphernalia for him all the way to Puri, coming from Varanasi. When they reached Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he had some relationship with Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, he kind of feigned a smile, but he wasn't actually happy to see him because he knew that within his heart he had the desire for moksha. His worship was like the worship of Putana, someone who comes looking as if they're very devoted, but actually their aim is to kill Krishna. So they're not actually devotees. Mayavad means, if there's Mayavad, there cannot be devotion. It's just the opposite. That's why, Prabhupada, he was always so strongly against this Mayavad. As long as this Mayavadi is within us, we can't actually be devotees. As long as we have any trace of this idea, I shall become one with God. I am worshipping Him, ultimately I become Him. As long as we have any sympathy for Mayavadis, we cannot actually be devotees. Like I was saying about Shukracharya, we can offer them some respect, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered respect, because they may be, in some cases, they may be learned, austere, renounced, all these things. So we can offer them some worldly respect, but envy of Krishna, cannot make any adjustment with that. So how is it like that? Then that also in the Nectar of Devotion you'll see that's discussed. How sometimes impersonalists, they appear to be like devotees. But that's just like a shadow, it's not actual devotion. They don't, for all their supposed service, they don't actually have the attitude of service. But they have the attitude that they want to enjoy Krishna or exploit Krishna. They don't have a mode of surrendered service. Even they may speak of seva, bhakti, surrender, all these things. If you discuss further, you'll find they don't actually have the mode of service. They don't want to surrender to Krishna. They're Mayavadis. What are our followers of Mayavadis? If the followers of Mayavadis, they don't know the philosophy, but they're contaminated by association. Definitely they imbibe the same contaminated ideas. And if you discuss with them, then they're not going to... Even if people have no philosophy, if you discuss with them, they're going to come out with Mayavad and all these things, because That's their contamination. No one's going to speak the philosophy of pure Vaishnavism unless they associate with pure devotees. Question, is it true that at every time, every point in time, there is a Nitya Siddha physically present? I've never seen it stated like this. This is usually said by people who want to advertise themselves as Nitya Siddhas, or who want to advertise that my guru is a Nitya Siddha and all others are useless. Usually people who are advertising like this, they're on some kind of personality cult trip. This is what I've seen. Otherwise, I've never seen it stated in Shastra that there's always a Nitya Siddha physically present on the planet at every time. There may be. But then you see, then everyone, what happened, people say this and think, oh, you see, he's saying that it must be, that he himself is, and he must be the one, or his guru is the one, and you see, maybe my guru's not good enough. And there's a lot of people who say like this, you see, you have to go to this guru, and then it's only by association with this Maha Bhagavat, then only you can be Krishna conscious, and all these other people are bogus. There are people who say like that, they're usually very fanatical, but we don't see that they're actually, practically we don't see that they're more advanced than others. It's just some kind of problem. You have to hear from this particular person, then only you can become advanced, and you're wasting your time with all others. It's actually very insidious kind of preaching to cut at the roots your faith in the personalities who have brought you to Krishna consciousness and are guiding you in Krishna consciousness, and to try to grab people into their little cult. So you just see the people who are talking like this, are they actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, or is it just some fanaticism? You'll say it's some fanaticism. I don't see the people who make this propaganda that they actually become so much greatly advanced than others. They might talk about the gopis and this and that, but talking about the gopis doesn't remove your material desires. You have to actually surrender to Krishna. Another point is that even if you have, you know, Radharani directly as your guru, or you know, whoever it may be, still you have to surrender. All they put is, you have to find the greatest Maha Maha Ashto Tarashata Ekhazashata or whatever it may be, Maha Paramahamsa Nitya Siddha, this, that, whatever it may be, you still have to surrender to Krishna. The guru can give you instruction, but you have to surrender to Krishna. So it's not that you just go and you go to Maha Maha Ashto Tarashata Sri Nitya Siddha Vrajvasi, this, that, and you simply sit and he speaks, and then all of a sudden you get Krishna praying. This is sahajya nonsense, which is widely broadcast in the name of Gauriya Vaishnavism, and it's just nonsense. You have to surrender. And again, the same thing, even if he is Nitya Siddha, Maha, Prem, this, that, and the other, it doesn't make that much difference to you, because you have to learn to control your mind and senses. Just like a five-year-old goes to school. He has to learn, first of all, arithmetic. Later on, he might, if he goes through all the different processes, he might end up as an atomic physicist. But at the age of five, it won't make that much difference to him whether Einstein's his teacher or whether just, you know, some ordinary teacher, because he has to learn the basics first of all. So, even if you do have Einstein as your teacher, he still has to teach you, first of all, 1 plus 1 equals 2. So, someone says that you have to have a Nitya Siddha as a guru, and by the way, I'm a Nitya Siddha. I didn't really mean to say that, but you can recognize a Nitya Siddha by the You see, I know one supposed Nitya Siddha who happens to be born in a Vrajvasi Brahmin family and strictly observes Kartik fasting every year. So he has written a book in which it said that you should only accept as a guru someone who is born in a Vrajvasi Brahmin family and who strictly follows Kartik Vrata. Not referring to anyone in particular, but I happen. Whatever he happens to be doing, he makes this the qualification. But that's not what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. He said, Kiba Bipra Kiba Nyasi Shudra Kene Noi Jai Krishna Tattva Rita Shri Guru Hoi. And you say, well, they said, no, the Siddhanta in all detail. And someone may be very expert in one part of the Siddhanta, but someone may be very learned in Shastra, but who knows all the Shastras? It may be that someone can come and he's particularly learned maybe some things from the 10th canto or the 11th canto or whatever, but then you ask him something from the Upanishads and exposition of Sankhya philosophy, he'll be lost. So because he's very expert in one part of Shastra and he told us from this particular part of Shastra, you think he knows everything. So there are many personality cults by people who want to advertise themselves, and there are many people who are attracted to such things because they're under this impression that you just go to a guru and he blesses you and then you become self-realized. That's not the process. What does the cloth worn by a sannyasi really mean? What do you really mean? You see here the question, Nityasiddha physically present. If yes, who is after Srila Prabhupada? Who is that one? Why one? Prabhupada, when he was asked, who will be the leader after you have departed, Prabhupada said, all my disciples, those who follow. That's it. It's simple. But we are looking for some. We always want something special. I'm so special. I have to find the special one. The others, they're just ordinary. I've got the special secret which makes me better than others. Saffron. What is the cloth meant by the sannyasi? What does it mean? What does the cloth mean? It shows you're in the sannyas ashram. That's all. You can distinguish between grihasthas and brahmacharis. Is the super soul present in the spiritual world also? Krishna's there. If he's not there, it wouldn't be the spiritual world. He's the super soul.
Continuing from this point, Maharaj. The so-called gurus advertising themselves for popularity. Especially these days we see there are so many TV serials that have sprung up. Especially it has become kind of commercialized to have gurus on television. And many a times even it happens that we come across people who are watching such things. So can you describe what are the things that go on in the name of that? One. And secondly, how to preach to such kind
Actually,
of
people? Actually, I don't watch these things. But I've been told that mostly the successful TV gurus are the ones who tell lots of jokes and they laugh a lot and tell a lot of stories. They don't say anything about God. And so I don't really know. I don't watch them. How do we preach to them? We have to impress upon people that spiritual life is much more serious than a TV commercial. You can tell people that anyone who poses to be a guru but doesn't teach, doesn't give you any restrictions, then he's cheating you. The first thing, there should be some restrictions in spiritual life. This whole thing about the Nitya Siddha after Prabhupada, I was more referring to things going on within or on the periphery of ISKCON. I wasn't talking about TV commercial gurus. I mean, sometimes we have the idea that, you know, ISKCON is just utopia, but there are so many funny things. People can take advantage of the good name of Prabhupada also to cheat others also, so. You have to be. That doesn't mean that everyone's cheating in the name of Prabhupada, don't take it that way. But there is one guru who has become very prominent advertising himself that I am the actual only real follower after Prabhupada. And if you want to understand Prabhupada, you have to understand through me. Although Prabhupada never said that. He says that. And some people are foolish enough to believe him. So these things are going on. You may not have experience of them, but you may have in future. Or someone else may come. At any time, you see, someone can come with some new idea. It happens all the time. Someone will come with... Recently, in Bombay, someone, he left ISKCON and became a guru. And he's preaching some process which is slightly different from that which is given by Prabhupada. And he's saying in the name of Prabhupada, and making so many disciples without giving them any restrictions. So he's become very popular. Easier path, you see. You just take initiation immediately and you don't have to follow any principles. You just chant the name of Gauranga more, because you'll get more mercy like that. The people are attracted. Because people think it's just like, you see, they're given advertisement, buy two, get one free. So people are in that mentality, you see. If you come to ISKCON, 16 rounds, 4 regulated principles, so many things, then you get initiated. And then you go to so-and-so who is, you know, dresses the same way, talks pretty much the same way, talks about Prabhupada, this, that, and says, you can take initiation from me and just chant whatever you like and do whatever you like. And say, oh, really? Oh, okay. Cheap, it's a special offer. You get the same benefit as getting initiation in ISKCON, but without all the hard work. Sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty good, but it's not the same thing. You get what you pay for. You want a cheap initiation? The whole process will be cheap.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, we understand that in order to go to spiritual world, you require a spiritual body. But in Bhagavatam, we hear that 4 Kumaras and even Durvasa Muni went to Vaikuntha. So, could you please explain on this aspect?
Yes. Of course, anything is possible by the grace of the Lord. And for the Lord, there's no difference between material and spiritual anyway. Even we find Dhruva Maharaj went in his self-same body back to Godhead. So, if you're going to reside in the spiritual world, then you'll be awarded a spiritual body. But the Lord may allow others to come. That's up to His discretion. The rules are there, and the Lord can adjust the rules according to His own convenience.
In Bhagavatam, first hand of Bhagavad, it is said that the educated and the intelligent persons must come forward and take up this process. But in the morning Bhagavatam class, it is said that this modern education is an obstacle for spiritual progress. So how we can understand these two statements?
Yeah. Both statements are there by our acharyas. Educated people, actually there is some, we could say that there is some possible benefit to modern education or any education. At least the brain starts to move, then you can apply the thinking function to the Bhagavad Tattva Vigyan. Of course, you're all that garbage on your head to deal with also. In some ways, less educated people it's easier for them to take to Krishna consciousness. They don't have so much garbage in their heads. They don't have so many doubts and misconceptions. And they can chant Hare Krishna very easily. Prabhupada is talking about educated people to enter this movement just because for a movement, for an organization to move in this and to work in this world, it requires people who can take leadership. So anyone can become a devotee, but people who have material qualification, then they're more suitable people to take leadership and to move in a world of educated people and to get things done. So if you're educated how to live in this world and work in this world, you can use that to spread Krishna consciousness also. For bhakti, this education, non-education, there's no difference. In fact, that non-education, that may be better. If the mind is not full of so much garbage. But Prabhupada wrote in one letter, that he said about preaching to college students, because we need people who can take leadership. So anyone who can take the bhakti, anyone can take the bhakti, but for practical organization and preaching and among the educated classes, it requires people who can move on that level. But we should always remember that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is meant for everyone, and one of the features that's stressed always is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, patra patra bichana hina hishtana shtan jayate, jaja ha pai tare deo premo dan, that they never considered who is qualified, who is less qualified, what is a proper place for spreading Krishna consciousness, what isn't. Whenever they got the opportunity, they preached Krishna consciousness and gave Krishna prema. So we should always remember this, that at that time, the religious rituals was the monopoly of the brahmanas, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broke that. Everyone can take to Krishna bhakti, so we should remember that. Krishna consciousness is meant for everyone. It is a fact that people who are like educated and intellectual, they're almost like different people to those who are not. Their mental and intellectual needs are quite different. Their whole way of thinking is quite different. And in many cases, their behavior and how they deal and how they talk, it's almost like a different kind of person. It's quite prominent in India, where there is quite a big difference between more educated people and less educated people. But it's there all over the world, actually. You get in the West, you get blue-collar workers and white-collar workers. It means like factory workers and office workers. And there's definitely a difference between, even in the West, between intellectual types and the non-intellectual types. But Krishna consciousness is meant for everyone. We should be careful not to make it like something kind of exclusive. Inclusive. Include everyone. Except those who are envious of Krishna. And then we should try to make them non-envious of Krishna. So, anything else? Are we over time or what? Before coming to ISKCON, I've done one Siddha Samadhi Yoga course. They're telling about the soul, they're teaching and meditation. And they do bhajan. But they don't tell anything about Krishna bhakti and devotional service. How they're telling about the soul and not telling anything about the source of the soul. Well, that's quite common among Mayavadis. Mayavadis say, Aham Brahmasmi. They recognize the spiritual platform and the existence of the soul and the difference of the soul between the body. But they don't recognize the supremacy of Krishna. So they could be said to be, they have the beginning stages of spiritual realization. But if they don't recognize the supremacy of Krishna, then even their recognizing the existence of the soul ends up in a big disaster, because they identify themselves as the supreme. I'm going to discuss this more in the lecture just coming up, which it's almost time for that. Is the aarti going on or what?
Maharaj, Gaurarti is starting.
We understand that Krishna does not force us to love or surrender to Him, but at the same time, we hear that Krishna has... What's the next word? Designed this world full of suffering to make us frustrated so the soul may love and surrender to Him. Explain these two aspects. Please kindly explain. Now, Krishna doesn't force us to surrender to Him, but He gives us good instruction and He gives us a miserable situation where we can understand that without surrendering to Him we can never be happy. But the misery of this material world, it's not really made by Krishna. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhuktritve hetu ruchita. Yes. The so-called sufferings and happiness in this material world, it is not caused by Krishna, it is caused by the conditioned soul himself. Because of his activities, he brings upon himself various reactions. So we can say Krishna is the ultimate cause in the sense that nothing... Krishna designed the whole setup, but the living entity has the choice to act in various ways, and if he acts wrongly, just like if the government makes the law that thieves will be imprisoned, well, you can't blame the government if someone steals and is imprisoned. The government made the law, but the person broke it, and he chose to break it, and he's getting the result of doing so. So it's not Krishna's fault that this world is full of suffering. It's the conditioned souls who have misused their opportunity. Krishna doesn't tell us to forget Him and to be sinful and envious. We choose to do so. Who asked this question about Siddha Yoga? Is that? Who is that? Yes, sir. Yeah. Are you reading Srila Prabhupada's books? Just starting now, yeah. You read regularly and come and study regularly, and in course of time, you'll be saved from Siddha Yoga. Now you're bewildered. You can't understand what that means. But when you understand what Krishna consciousness is, then you'll understand how misleading these so-called other processes are. Real Siddha Yoga is Krishna conscious. The real Siddhi is Krishna Prem Bhakti. Anything else or not? Yeah. We have to associate with Vaishnavas with discrimination. That means that we should associate with Vaishnavas who possess discrimination, or we should have discrimination in associating with Vaishnavas.
We should have discrimination while associating with Vaishnavas.
Yeah.
Rupa Goswami says this in the NOI. So, to what extent is it right to judge the level of other Vaishnavas? Because bhakti goes on over several lifetimes.
Yeah, it's required. Rupa Goswami gives us his upadesh, how to associate with various levels of Vaishnava. So I think the answer is given in the question itself. How do we discriminate? Diksha asti chet panati dish chapajam tamisham. Well, it was that verse. How's that? You like that? That according to Rupa Goswami's direction, that we should mentally honor those who have taken up the process of Krishna consciousness, offer obeisances to those who are initiated, and worship and serve those who are nindadishunya, those who are free from the propensities of unnecessarily criticizing others. And then you say, well, you may criticize someone by saying that, but calling a spade is not criticism. The propensity to enviously and maliciously malign devotees, that is obviously not the symptom of topmost Vaishnava. But on the other hand, it is the duty of a Vaishnava to point out what are the discrepancies in devotional service so that we can avoid them, and we should avoid associating with that. Also we see Kapila Dev says there are different kinds of devotees, those who are separatists, So these instructions are there. We should see. We should understand. Anyone who's taken devotional service, that is glorious. But at the same time, we don't want to intimately associate with persons whose association will not help us to advance in Krishna consciousness. That doesn't mean that we're rude to them, but that associate means, particularly this close association, which is also defined by Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, especially this Guhyam Akhyati Prichati. We don't reveal our minds or become very close to persons who we can see are not very serious about devotional service, or have some other motivation or whatever. The other things, giving prasadam, taking prasadam, offering gifts, this, that may go on. But especially this, revealing our minds in confidence, that should be done among advanced devotees. And we should discuss Krishna consciousness among devotees who have faith in Krishna and who don't have a very doubtful nature, who take pleasure in discussing Krishna, all these things.
Maharaj, in Chaturmas we abstain from certain food items like leafy months in first month and so on. So can you just tell us what is the significance of leaving different items in different months?
Well, Prabhupada himself comments in the purport that on the whole one is supposed to give up sense gratification. So it's not a very great sense gratification to give up. Although it's funny, at that season, that's the season, that's what's the first month, is Ashvin, no? So at that season when there's rain, it's already a lot of rain. So that's the season when there's more, in Bengal especially, there's all different kinds of what's called a shark. So it just says that giving up sense gratification. But to tell it, you can follow. I follow these things actually, but apparently Prabhupada himself didn't follow. He just put in the purport because his own guru put in the purport. And actually, you'll see Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, that he used to follow these things. Even today in the Gaudiya Math, they follow more strictly. But Prabhupada didn't stress it. Actually, in the Western countries, Chaturmasi has no meaning anyway, because there's no rainy season there. Anyway. Prabhupada put more stress on preaching Krishna consciousness than following Chaturmasi. Some of his disciples who were living in the Dham in Mayapur, he sanctioned, okay, you follow, but then you should follow strictly. Nowadays, you see, if someone can chant 16 rounds and follow 4 regs, that's pretty good. And extra austerities, if you can follow, all right, but more important is to associate with it. Just like one of the principles of Chaturmasya, you should remain within the same building for 4 months. You shouldn't go outside your house, and you can't come to the temple. Better you come to the temple. Sometime in the name of pointing out discrepancies in ISKCON devotees, some devotees go on criticizing almost all devotees, always they speak about how to deal with them. Well, you could point out good qualities in the persons that they're criticizing. Suggestion. Sorry. I don't mean to be too critical. I'm sorry if I go overboard sometimes.